Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. And if you are an author listening to today's interview and would like to be featured on this network, please visit speakuptalkradio.com for all the details or contact us at pr@speakuptalkradio.com. Well, by now, you know that I have had the pleasure of interviewing nearly 100 authors last year. And during most of our conversations, we talk about the editing and the publishing process. Today, this is a first, and I'm excited because I have the opportunity to share with you someone on the other side who helps authors with this process. She is freelance editor Anne Victory. Anne specializes in romance, urban fantasy, and cozy mysteries. Her boutique editing business, Victory Editing, offers a full range of services from line editing to oops detection, formatting, and a NetGalley co-op for eARC distribution. She provides clients, many of whom are New York Times and USA Today bestsellers, with a full editing team while giving them the convenience of a single point of contact. Anne is also the co-founder of the Association of Independent Publishing Professionals. And finally, she is the chief cook and bottle washer for her husband, a boisterous spaniel who loves to wear dresses, two cats and two birds. And she's going to share all she knows with us today. So let's bring her on. Welcome to the network, Anne.
Thank you, Pat. I appreciate being here.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Now, before we get started, I have to ask about this boisterous spaniel who loves to wear dresses.
Her name is Bella. She is about a year and a half old, and she basically makes sure I keep my butt in chair and on target for deadlines.
What's with the wearing of dresses?
She's just so cute, and I've never had a girl dog before, so she's lucky she doesn't have her nails painted.
You're funny. I just get a mental picture of that. Anyway, speaking of animals, you also say that you have two cats and two birds. And I love your logo with the two birds. Is there any story behind that?
There's not really. Well, other than I worked with my graphic designer to incorporate something that was a little bit personal in the logo instead of just kind of the typical corporate look to it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, tried to incorporate a little bit of me in that logo. And I think she did a good job on that. And that was Eve Milady that did that logo for me.
Well, it's a great job. It really got my attention. I was attracted to it. So I felt like I had to mention it today.
Well, thank you.
Yes, yes. Well, now, share your story perhaps with us that leads us to how and why you decided to create your company, Victory Editing.
Oh, I think I got started about, several years ago now. It was when ebooks really had first started taking off. The Kindle had been out for about 3 years or so, but it was when the price point came down from about $400 for a Kindle, which is kind of out of reach for most people, to where it was, I think, about $150, and that was more doable, and you started seeing the upsurge of people self-publishing. And, you know, at the time, and I started reading some of those books, and I thought, you know, these are really great stories. But I did notice that there were some typos and other blips in there, which not that you don't find those in traditionally published books, because you absolutely do. But it kind of gave me the idea to do what's called a cold read or a final pass read to just kind of check for some of those leftover things that got missed in the editing process. And it went on from there. You know, I branched from doing what I call oops detection to full line editing. And then over time, you know, I've had clients ask, you know, well, we'd like to have another pass done by somebody else, because when you have the same person going over and over and over the document again, you know, things get missed. So, you know, the more fresh eyes you can have on a project, the better. So from there, I expanded to offering proofreading as well. And I recently brought on a formatter. So other than cover design, basically, I can do all of the production process as far as the editing goes. in-house between myself and then two people that I have who work under me to do the proofreading and the oops detection and then send it on to formatting. And that just gives authors, it saves a lot of time. You know, they don't have to worry about scheduling with three or four different people and, you know, trying to make sure that everybody has the files on time. And, you know, most of that's handled by me. So it saves them a lot of time and effort and it lets them spend more time writing.
Exactly. I mean, that's what they're all about. And I wrote it down 2 seconds before you said it was fresh eyes. And I think that's extremely important because it's very easy as you've written something, or even if you've read it once or twice, just to gloss over that error that could make a difference to
right.
someone who hasn't seen it before.
Well, it does, you know, and I think that every time you read a book from an editorial point of view, I think your efficiency goes down. And certainly I don't have any studies or numbers to back that up. But, you know, I'd say probably it's what I call the 90% rule, and that's the first pass that you make for editing. You'll probably catch about 90% of the errors and stuff, you know, and then the second pass, if it's done by a different person, that's another 90%. So eventually, I don't think there's ever such a thing as a perfect book, but, you know, obviously we want it to be as close to perfect as possible. And I just think that you get more, from an author's perspective, they get more bang for the buck if they're getting fresh people to do that editing process at each stage. I mean, there are a lot of freelance editors out there, and they're like, oh, we do three passes or two passes, but all by the same person. And I'm like, you know, they're not doing that for free. They're charging you for those additional passes. And my personal opinion is that you're going to get more bang for your buck if you're paying that extra money for the additional passes to somebody that hasn't worked with the manuscript before. So
I agree. I like that thought of 90%, then another fresh eyes picks up another 90% rather than just maybe another 2% if the same person reads over it.
Right.
Yep. Okay, so you do offer a full range of services, and maybe tell us a little about them. I love the oops detection. I think you even trademarked that, right?
I did fairly recently. I've been using it for several years now, but I finally made it official and trademarked it last year. So, well, I offer line editing. That is the first thing. Then there's another step that's called several different things, depending on who you ask to, but normally it goes by the term developmental editing or story editing or comprehensive editing. And that's the big picture things. That's, you know, the plot. You know, do your characters need adjusting? Are they not sympathetic enough? Not evil enough? You know, are they acting consistently? What is your plot? You know, is it dragging in that sort of thing? I don't do that. I don't do the developmental editing. There are a lot of great editors out there who do, but that's just not really my forte. The next step after that is what I call line editing. And with this, you know, anytime you hire an editor, you want to make sure that you're both on the same page because, you know, one person might call it line editing, another person might call it copy editing or something entirely different. So you need to make sure, you know, what exactly are you doing when you say that you're going to be line editing? For me, that's sentence level, paragraph level editing. Does the sentence read as smoothly as it should? Could it be phrased better? Things like chapter endings, I think, are very important. You know, you don't ever, they say, never end a chapter with the character going to bed because that instantly, you know, the reader's like, ooh, it's 2 a.m, I need to go to bed. You know, so you want to have that chapter close lead into the next chapter. So, ooh, what happens next? And they want to stay up just one more page, one more chapter. Things of the, you know, is the imagery that you're evoking strong enough? Is your dialogue, could that read more naturally? Does it sound stilted? Your descriptions, are you showing versus telling? Are you immersing the reader in your characters, or is it more like they're reading a lecture, which is never good? That's the kind of thing I work on with line editing. And then I also do copy editing while I'm doing that, which copy editing, in my mind, that's mechanical editing. You know, is everything, you know, grammatically correct, spelling correct, that sort of thing, whereas the line editing is more stylistic. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you can have a correct sentence that's still a crappy sentence.
Right.
So, you know, with the line editing, I go a step further than that. The next service that I have that I offer is what, You know, some people, depending on who you talk to, some people will call it copy editing and some people will call it proofreading. The confusion with that, and I blame it on schools, you know, teachers always tell you, you know, make sure you proofread your essay before you turn it in. And so we've come to expect that proofreading means checking for errors, whereas in traditional publishing, what proofreading means, the proofreader compares the previous versions of the document with the final version of the document before it goes to print. So they're making sure that everything got incorporated correctly. Not necessarily that they're checking for correctness, although certainly, you know, if they spot something, they'll point it out. But like I said, mainly they're checking that everything matches up correctly. But I found that most people, certainly most authors, and I think just about everybody, equates proofreading with that, you know, check for errors and check for grammatical correctness. And that's when I say proofreading, that's what I'm referring to. But a lot of editors may call that copy editing, you know, strictly mechanical, grammatical checking for errors. So that's something to keep in mind. And then finally is the oops detection. And that is, like I said, that's a cold read, a final pass, just checking for stray typos that, you know, made it through the other two passes of editing, because it seems like there's always something, you know, you can read something five times and still you find an error in it. So there's that. And then lastly would be formatting. And that is basically taking the manuscript from a Word document and converting it over to where you have your EPUB files and your Kindle Mobi files and everything so that you can go ahead and upload to the various online retailers.
Wow, so there's a lot involved in this that makes it difficult for a writer or an author to handle all of this him or herself.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's a reason when they say self-publishing, you're not just the writer anymore. You are also the publisher, and that means that you're the project manager, the salesperson, the marketer, the accountant, the whole nine yards. And it is a lot to handle. And I think that's one thing that, you know, why Victory Editing is so helpful, because it just takes a little bit of the project management off of the author's plate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I said, they're able to, I'm their single point of contact. I make sure that everything's on target for their release date. You know, I make sure that the proofreaders are doing what they're supposed to do, that everything is just falling into line like it should be, and they don't have five different people that they have to try and manage.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a huge time saver for most authors.
I think it's a time saver, and it also offers you a level of comfort, I think, to know that there's one person overseeing all of this rather than trying to coordinate a group of people.
Right. Mm-hmm. I think so, too.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a lot of my authors say, you know, that they're just relieved to be able to turn it over to me.
Yep.
And, you know, they still have to do the incorporation of edits and stuff
sure.
like that. But, like, you know, as we said, it's just one less thing for them to have to deal with. They don't have to sit and deal with managing several different people and several different schedules.
Right, right. So let's say somebody listening is writing a book. When would they know that they needed to hire you? What point in time would they say, okay, ready for this?
I would say they probably, as soon as they start writing, probably need to get in contact with an editor. It depends on how fast they're going to be writing. You know, if it's somebody that has a day job, you know, they write maybe a chapter a night or four or five pages a night, so it might be a year off before they have a completed manuscript. You know, they could probably wait a little bit. If they publish, if they've been writing for a while and publish a book every, say, 2-3 months or so, or even twice a year, then yeah, you probably want to try and get in contact with an editor at least 6 weeks out, probably 2-3 months out is a better idea for that, because most of the good editors who are in demand are booked fairly, you know, they may be booked out 2-3 months in advance. You never can tell. So, you know, but you can find editors who are just getting started, or they had a cancellation or something of that nature. And so, you know, they are able to fit you in fairly quickly. But the odds of getting in at last minute are fairly slim, at least with somebody that's good.
That's good. Right, right. So maybe take us through the process that somebody's ready to work with you, or maybe their manuscript is ready. What can a person then expect? You talked about the different range of services. Walk us through a typical editing process from time that they submit, or how do they submit the manuscript, and then when it comes back. Just give us a little tour of that.
Oh, sure. Generally, the first step is, you know, an author will get in touch with me and, you know, they'll decide they want to send over what's called a sample. Most editors will offer a free sample edit, although some do, you know, they want, you know, $25, $35 that's applicable towards your editing bill if you book with them. But most often, I think a free sample edit is generally the norm. But at any rate, once you send over the sample, I typically will take that and do the sample edit. And that does a couple of things. It gives the author an idea, you know, will our styles mesh? That's the first thing. Then the other thing is it gives me an idea of how long is this going to take. That way I can block out an appropriate amount of time for the project. And it also lets me give them an accurate quote, you know, for how long it'll take. So once that's done, I send back the sample. I send back, you know, this is my estimate for how much, you know, it'll cost to get that done for you. And also what a general timeline will be, which usually is about, I say, 4 to 6 weeks for line editing. And then for each additional pass, the proofreading and the oops detection is generally about another 2 weeks each. So typically about 6 to 8 weeks for 3 passes of editing. So once they decide that they want a book, we go ahead and put it on the schedule. And then once the manuscript's finished, they email it to me in Word format. And I complete the edits and send it back to them, at which point they incorporate the changes using Microsoft's Track Changes feature. And then they send it back to me again, at which point it goes to the proofreader, and she does her thing, again using Track Changes. And once she's done, goes back to the author for incorporation again. And that just means, you know, either accepting or rejecting the changes, addressing any comments that are brought up that might, you know, maybe there's an inconsistency or something of that nature. And then once they have that, they send over the final Word file, and that goes to oops detection. Crystal is the girl who does oops detection for me, and she actually will read that on her Kindle as opposed to in Word. And we generate a line-by-line report, and it'll just have the sentence in context. You know, like, say, I thought I was losing my mind, only losing was spelt L-O-O-S-I-N-G. That will be highlighted with the correction put in, but then the author needs to do a search on the document for that and correct it manually. And the reason we do it that way is Word has a really nasty habit when you're using track changes of either it'll insert an extra space or it'll delete a space or just little hinky things like that that I call editing artifacts. So you don't want to introduce errors on that last pass. And that's why you go through and make those last adjustments manually. And then after that's done and the final completed version is ready, then it gets sent over for formatting, and then it's ready to go. So,
I bet by the end of the time, you have a pretty intimate relationship, not only with the author, but with the book.
I do. I do. And, you know, I'm very pleased that I consider a lot of my clients to be my friends. I try to build a relationship. Most of my authors are repeat authors, and, you know, they'll send a book over every 2 or 3 months. But I really do try and foster that relationship as opposed to a more just strictly business arrangement, you know. So, and every editor would be different on that. You know, some are very, I guess, I don't want to say lucrative. That's not the word I want.
It.
But, you know, they tend to keep that professional distance, whereas I tend to be a little bit more, I'm an editor and words are failing me. But, you know, I do tend to be friends with my authors, at least to the point where if they have an issue with their book or they need advice or something like that, you know, they're always welcome to email me. And I just feel like that's the best way to run a small business. I mean, you know, I don't have a lot of clients. So far as, you know, I'm certainly not like a business that might have hundreds of people, you know, walking in and out the door. You know, I have a small group of clients, and I try and build a good relationship with them. So
that's why I brought it up. I just got the feeling from talking with you that you would be somebody that an author would feel comfortable with. And as you say, it wouldn't be just that aloof business kind of an arrangement. So speaking of that, and you talked about the free sample edit, because that would help an author determine if they wanted to work with you. But is there anything else that a writer should go about to determine who to hire as an editor? Any little key questions or things to look for?
Oh, absolutely. And I actually do have an article on my website that talks about an editor's tips for finding an editor. I would say, you know, the big thing is obviously going to be price. I mean, you know, you want to find somebody that's a good fit. But at the same time, if you have a budget that's only so much, there's not really anything you can do to change that as much as you might like to. You know, I'd love to drive a Mercedes. I just can't afford it. But, you know, aside from that, you know, so first you want to find somebody that's in your price range. You want to find somebody that has availability that matches with yours. But beyond those two things, you want to check for competency. There is no association or board for certification or anything like that for editors. So you want to be fairly careful, you know, check over that sample. If you're not real sure about, I guess, about certain grammar issues, you can always research those. But, you know, I would recommend sending samples to several different people. Send the same sample to each editor. That way you don't have, you know, you're not comparing apples to oranges type thing. And you can tell a lot based on that. You know, did one editor mark a lot more things than another editor? Did the one editor think that maybe all you wanted was a proofread, whereas the other editor thought, you know, that you wanted a developmental edit? So, you know, that goes back to making sure everybody's on the same page so far as what needs to be done. But, you know, you can tell if, assuming that everybody is doing a copy edit, for instance, but one person marked 50 changes and another person only marked 20, that's going to kind of make your eyebrow go up as you're wondering, okay, what happened here? You know, did the one editor just not know what they were doing and marked a lot of things that didn't need to be marked? Or was it the other editor who missed a lot of things? So, you know, that gives you a chance to compare things from that note. And you can also tell a little bit, you know, from the comments. That, you know, some editors are harsh. I mean, they, you know, this sucks, you know, and they don't make any bones about it, whereas others are a little more gentle and make more constructive criticism. But, you know, some authors like that directness of, you know, I don't like this, fix it. So, you know, if that meshes with your style, then great. You know, if not, then you can look at somebody that's a little bit less direct. So there's that issue. I would say ask them what references they use. It's somewhat shocking to me that I've talked to editors who don't necessarily use a dictionary. They use Google. I'm like, Google's not a dictionary. It's a search engine. You know, and Grammar Girl is great, but that's not a style guide. So for books that are published in the U.S., I would say that your editor should at the very least use the Chicago Manual of Style, 16th edition, as a style guide, and Merriam-Webster Collegiate for a dictionary. If it's published, if it's being published in the UK, then they over there generally use Oxford Style Guide and also Oxford Dictionary. So those are the two things that you want to check with on that. And from there, like I said, you just want to make sure that schedules, budgets, and things of that nature match up. But those are the big things I would say. Also check with, you know, if you have friends who are also authors, check with them, see who they use or who they recommend. You know, authors tend to talk, and they are happy to share both good and bad experiences if you ask. So.
Wow, that's great advice. I like the idea of sending that same paragraph or piece or chapter or whatever to the same three or four folks for a sample edit. That really will, I would think, give you an idea of
well,
your comfort
it,
level
it
with
it. Well, it does, and I know I've had some authors. I sent, you know, chapter one to this editor and chapter two to that. Like, well, that doesn't really give you a comparison basis, you know, and if you're fantastic with English and grammar, then that might work for you. But I think most authors, they have a great grasp of it, but they're not necessarily, it's not their day job. You know, they're
right.
writing the words.
Right.
So being able to compare side by side the same piece edited by different people is a really good litmus test, I think.
No, I agree with you. I agree. And the first thing you mentioned was pricing and availability. Pricing, I don't want you to give away all of that. But how does that run? Is it typically per job or per...
It's going to depend on the editor as far as your range. And generally, you'll find most editors tend to use two or three different ways of quoting. One would be an hourly quote. And then you also have editors to quote per word or per page, and then you have other editors who will quote per project. I tend to find with indie authors that, you know, most of them want a per project rate as opposed to hourly, you know, because they want to know what it's going to cost them at the end of the day, not, you know, well, it could be this or it could be that. It's kind of like, you know, when you take your car to the mechanic, you don't want to necessarily know what their hourly labor is. You want to know what it's going to cost to get your alternator fixed. So, you know, personally, I quote based on time. Like when I do the sample edit, I estimate how much time the project's going to quote. I'm sorry, how much time the project is going to take. And then I quote based on that. But when I give the estimate to my author, it's a per project quote. So they know as long as their manuscript doesn't change significantly, this will be what it's going to cost them. And by change significantly, you know, if when you sent it to me it was 50,000 words and now it's suddenly 80,000, you know, that quote's not going to be the same. Yeah. Or if the sample was misrepresentative of the body of work, then it's not going to be the same. But I have actually never had that happen where the sample didn't match up with the rest of the manuscript, knock on wood. So
that gives us a little hint into that. As you were talking, I was wondering, has anyone ever gotten upset with you because of the advice you shared with them?
Thank you. I don't recall.
Oh, that's good.
Time my authors are, you know, oh my gosh, I didn't think of that.
Or, good.
You know, you were so right. You know, if something isn't working, I'll say so. But I also feel, you know, there's no need to be overly blunt, you know. I mean, there's better ways of saying that something needs to be worked on than just saying, it sucks, you know. So, I mean, I've never actually seen something where I would want to say that, but I've seen editors say, oh, yeah, I'm rough with my authors. I'm like, well, okay.
Yeah. It works for you.
Right? Oh, my gosh. I like my day to be pleasant, and that's not, I don't like doing that. Yeah. So, but yeah, most of the time my authors are really grateful for the advice I give. Either I pointed out something they hadn't thought about, you know, or just gave them some food for thought on something.
Yep.
So, you know, it's a good thing.
Good relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you also have a professional organization that you helped to co-found called the Association of Independent Publishing Professionals. Just give us a quick idea about that. Maybe we'll talk about it in depth at some other point in time.
Oh, sure. I'd love to. The AIPP, we founded that, and we being myself and two other editors, last year, I think it was around April, actually. I want to say we went live April 1st, April Fool's Day. So it's still a small organization as we're kind of gaining ground and finding new members. Basically, what we do is give professionals who work with independent authors a place they can go to talk to other independent publishing professionals about best practices, tips for how to work with clients on certain things, tips for, you know, their website, various classes for expanding their skills. You know, there are some professional organizations out there, like there's the EFA, which is the Editorial Freelancers Association, and they're a great group, but they are really broad. You know, editors that are in that group can edit medical books, textbooks, newspapers, the whole nine. And so it's not necessarily as helpful for people who work with self-publishing indie authors as it might be otherwise. So we really wanted to fit that niche. And then cover artists and formatters, author's assistants, those people don't have any sort of professional organization. So we just really felt like there was a need to be filled there. What we're trying to work on this year is building our membership to have more than, we have people other than editors, but because myself and the other two founders are editors, that's kind of the bulk of the membership right now. And we'd really like to branch out and have more narrators and artists and things of, you know, publicists, things of that nature. But also this year we're planning to have our first online class, which will discuss things like setting up a business, you know, business plan, how to set up your accounting, things of that nature. customer relations. You know, a lot of people who are doing editing and cover art, they've never had a business before that they had to run. So it's a lot to learn, kind of like with self-publishing authors, they have to wear a lot of hats.
Right.
You know, I spend probably half of my day editing, another half doing business stuff that, you know, accounting, dealing with my website, you know, answering emails, things of that nature. So it's a lot to get a handle on if you've never done it before. And that's just kind of what we're about. We want to provide support for people who are working in the independent publishing industry.
That's exciting. So you do have a website. That's AIPPonline.org?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, excellent, excellent. All right, we covered a lot today, but is there anything that we missed that you would like to talk about today?
So I'll tell you actually one thing I would say, especially for newer authors who are just starting out, don't feel like you have to get the best, highest priced cover artist, editor, et cetera, fill in the blank right at first. My own pricing tends to fall middle of the road, I would say. Not the cheapest. I'm not the most expensive either. But, you know, if you're just starting out and you've got a limited budget, you might can find somebody who's either just getting started or trying to build their portfolio that's got lower rates, or you might find somebody that is a better match for your skill set at the time. And what I mean by that is, you know, if you're in the seventh grade and you're taking science class, your parents can probably help you with your homework. You know, once you get to college, unless your parents are engineers, they're probably not going to be able to help with that so much. You're going to have to get a tutor that the university offers. Once you get to grad school, you're probably going to have to go to either, you know, your professors or, you know, or other upper level students in order to get help with problems. And if you're out in the field, let's say you've gotten your doctorate degree and this, that, you know, at that point, you may have to go talk to Michio Kaku before you can get help with string theory, you know, and it's the same way with editing. When you're first starting out, you know, one particular editor might be able to teach you a lot that you didn't necessarily know as far as craft issues, you know, grammar issue, that sort of thing. But then as you grow as a writer and the more you write, the more you will grow. You're going to read books on craft. You're going to work with various editors and your toolbox is going to grow. And at that point, you may feel like, you know what? I think I've outgrown this editor. And that's okay. You know, so don't feel like you have to pick one person that you're going to stay with forever and ever. You know, it's okay. It's kind of like a starter house. You can get a smaller house, and as you grow up, you know, grow bigger, you can get a bigger one. Same thing with cover artists. You know, when you start out, you might get the pre-made covers. There's a lot of websites out there that offer pre-made covers where, you know, they have the cover mock-up and you buy it, and then they plug in your author name and your book title, and, you know, they run about $50. But, you know, after you've been writing for a year or two and your sales are up, you may be like, you know what, I want to go hire one of these boutique cover designers that's going to make a custom cover for me and do that, and that's a way to grow your business. And at that point, you might want, you know, look at getting an editor who has a little more to offer with where your experience level is, that sort of thing. So I think that's really important for new authors to realize that, you know, they can grow their, that's one way to grow their business is by expanding their production team.
Wow, that was great advice. Thank you for sharing that. Well, in wrapping up then, where can folks go to learn more about you and how can they contact you to make you their editor?
My website is www.victoryediting.com. That's VictoryEditing. And then they can also email me at anne@victoryediting.com. And my email link is on my website too.
Excellent, excellent. All righty, so we're sending everyone to victoryediting.com, and that's Anne Victory. Anne, this was a pleasure today. I've learned a lot. You gave us some great ways that our authors who are listening could improve the outcome of their book by getting a hold of you, so I hope they head over to victoryediting.com. Thank you for sharing you today.
Oh, thank you. It was a pleasure to talk to you. So thank you so much. I really appreciate it.